Welcome to the Back Room of Politics podcast. We're today with Auckland remaining in level 4 lockdown and the rest of the country now at level 3 as we try to stave off the rampant spread of the Delta variant of COVID-19. An effort, I might say, now described by Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison and New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian as impossible. The questions are, is that the case? Are we right to be continuing to pursue the elimination strategy? How long will lockdowns be our go-to as protection from this virus? And for how long will managed isolation of people coming into the country be a defence against a possible further Delta incursion? And at what percentage of the population being double vaccinated can we reliably look at life close to what we once knew in a world where this thing is not going away anytime soon? Joining me today in the Back Room of Politics is National's COVID-19 spokesman, Chris Fisher. Chris, welcome to the Back Room of Politics.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. So tell me all those questions. What's your view? Where do we sit at the moment? How well are we doing? And what are the prospects for a New Zealand that lives without the concentration of lockdown?
Well, look, there's a lot there. I suppose the first point to say is we have been pretty lucky so far at avoiding Delta. It's been rampaging around the world and it's actually been in our MIQ facilities since early April. Now, we've been saying in the National Party, alongside public health experts for quite a while now, that it's inevitable that Delta, well, not inevitable, but highly likely that Delta would try and make its way into the community. And we need to have prepared for that. And unfortunately, what this outbreak has demonstrated is that we have not been planning for it. So, for example, there are issues in MIQ that could have been foreseen that have not been dealt to. So take the Crown Plaza, for example, which is, looks like where the outbreak started. At the Crown Plaza, you've had a public walkway next door to the exercise area that people have been exercising in who are COVID positive, and the Crown Plaza passed all its infection control orders. And I find that pretty amazing that there wasn't a review done of MIQ in light of the Delta variant to make sure everything was absolutely in tip-top shape. That's one issue. Another issue is in relation to contact tracing and testing, for example. People listening will know that the testing, there's been an enormous amount of testing being done, but people are waiting 10, 11, sometimes a couple of 10, 11 hours, sometimes 1 or 2 days before they are able to get tested. So we've not had the availability and the capability to scale up testing in the way that we need it. We're not making use of saliva testing, for example. We're not making use of rapid antigen testing, for example. So look, the government says that they've been planning for Delta. Our view would be that they actually have done a pretty poor job of that and there hasn't been enough planning put in place.
Okay, so that's how it is. But we too from here, what do we do? Clearly, we don't want people coming into the country who are going to spread COVID-19. But of course, in reality, we're not going to know until people do get here whether or not the pre-departure tests, which we called for early last year and the government only this relatively few months, past few months, have adopted. What is going to be the long-term prospect for people coming into New Zealand?
The single most important thing we can do is get as many New Zealanders vaccinated as possible. And just in the recent past, the availability of the vaccine has been opened up to everyone. So from September 1, everyone in the country over the age of 12 can go and get vaccinated. And it's really good to see lots of New Zealanders doing that. And my message to people listening is if you can get vaccinated, please go and do so. Make that choice to get vaccinated. It's absolutely critical. The key thing we can do is get the numbers as high as possible. If you look at the modelling out of Australia by the Doherty Institute, for example, they suggest that a vaccination coverage rate of between 70 and 80% allows the country to start opening up and avoid lockdowns. And that is absolutely imperative because we cannot just keep going on in and out of lockdown every time there's a community case of COVID or community case of Delta in the community, locking down the whole country for level 4. Costs, you know, about $1.5 billion a week to lock down the country. That's an enormous economic cost, let alone all the social costs that people listening will know about, being separated from friends and family, not being able to go to work, school kids not going to school. The social costs are enormous. So we've got to try and avoid future nationwide lockdowns. And the way to do that is vaccination. It's actually really, really simple. Get as many people vaccinated as quickly as possible. And that's why it's so disappointing that we are the second slowest in the OECD for vaccination. It doesn't give me any pleasure. as an opposition MP to say that. It's just the reality. We have not been vaccinating up until the last week or so at nearly a fast enough rate. The government says that we've had a supply shortage. Well, that's on the government. We've got a supply shortage because the government didn't move quickly enough to secure vaccine supply to come into New Zealand. And we were late to sign the contracts with Pfizer. We were late to actually order them. And, you know, to make matters worse, we haven't ordered any booster shots as well, which is a whole other issue we could potentially talk about. So vaccination is the way through, and we've just simply got to get as many people vaccinated as possible.
I think by and large that message is well understood by New Zealanders. The demand in the last 3-4 weeks has been exceptional, and long may that continue until we get to those very high percentage rates of vaccination. And I think it's encouraging too that some of the stupidity of the anti-vaxxers has disappeared from some of the commentary that's around the place. Can I just ask this question? While we can look back and say, well, here was a failing, there was a failing, and there's been numerous failings, there will be people who say, well, okay, there was no blueprint for this, there was no plan, we never knew what was going on. And to some extent, I think you can accept that. But where to from here? Because what's not clear is what the long-term plan is. So I heard in the House today, the Parliament today, the Prime Minister saying that a vaccination target was actually the wrong thing to do because it would perhaps encourage or give the message that you only wanted that particular number vaccinated and that you were prepared to leave out the rest of them. I think that's utterly ridiculous because if we get to 100%, that's great, and it should be available to 100%. But where to from here? What is the long-term prospects for a New Zealand that has reasonably eliminated COVID-19, but not completely?
Well, just on the vaccination target, look, I agree with you. And we've argued for a while now that there needs to be a vaccination target. And the main reason for that is I think people will psychologically get behind a target. And it gives people something to aim for. But unfortunately, this government's kind of opposed to targets because whenever they set targets, they never reach them. But that's not a reason not to do it. I think people will embrace the idea that at a national level, a collective energy, we can go for a target and realise the benefits of achieving that target. If you think about, you know, to use an imperfect analogy, the, you know, Red Sox of the America's Cup, you know, even telethons, you know, when we bought that beach down on the South Island a few years back, you know, everyone reached into their pocket and said, right, let's go for it as a country. So imperfect analogy, but I still think it holds, which is New Zealanders can get behind a national effort. And if we say to the country, rightio, go for 75%, because at 75% we avoid lockdowns and we can start to open the country back up again, I think people get behind it. So I think the Prime Minister's wrong on that. Obviously, that we want as many people vaccinated as possible, but targets have their place. Look, in terms of the long-term future, it's a really interesting question. So we have had a strategic goal here in New Zealand of elimination of COVID-19, and that has served us pretty well. What we've got to do is get through this lockdown and put in place the mechanisms and the tools to make sure that implementation actually works. That's why you hear the National Party talking about saliva testing, talking about rapid antigen testing, talking about some of the preparation that we need to do. But even now you hear the government saying, well, actually, Delta's changed the game. And even Professor Skegg from the government's own expert advisory group saying, we've got to try as hard as possible. But even they will admit that once we start to open up in 2022, there will be cases of Delta and COVID in the community. And I think that's going to be a major psychological change for New Zealanders. And I put that to Professor Skegg in the one of the Parliamentary Select Committee Zoom calls last week. You think about the psychology of New Zealanders at the moment. It's, you know, there's a COVID case in the community. We all quite rightly get very freaked out about that because we don't have that high vaccination coverage to protect us. But, you know, if we get to sort of 75-80% first quarter next year, the science and the modelling shows and the government's own plan shows that there will be COVID in the community, but it's able to be managed by the health system. But psychologically, New Zealanders getting used to that, I think will be quite a confronting challenge for New Zealanders. And you know, Professor Skegg says that as well, I think. And what we've got to make sure we do is get the health system geared up and make use of all the available technologies we can use to make sure that we can aggressively suppress COVID when it turns up in the community and use that contact tracing and testing to make sure it's stamped out the moment it comes up.
What is a rapid antigen testing test?
So people listening might, and people overseas might know what they are. So this is basically a test where you just take a quick swab of your up your nose and then chuck it into basically what's almost like a home pregnancy test. And it gives you the results 10, 15 minutes very, very quickly. And you can even do it when you're asymptomatic, so when you're not showing symptoms of having COVID. The National Health Service in the United Kingdom, for example, says that these tests are just as accurate as the up the nose PCR tests.
And I think they're very cheap over there. They're about a pound a time.
Yeah, very cheap.
And a couple of dollars here.
Very, very cheap. And they're widely used in the United Kingdom, all over the place. I mean, people buy them from pharmacies. They use them on a daily basis. And so they've been very effective overseas. You know, they're actually banned in New Zealand. Not allowed to import them into New Zealand. They're banned.
Right.
And look, they've got their place. So if you take, for example, this current outbreak, we've got tens of thousands of contacts, and we're saying to them all, go and get tested. But then we make everyone line up at one of these mass testing clinics. People wait 10, 11 hours. Sometimes they have to come back the next day and get tested. Our view would be use saliva testing, which is another form of testing, and it's also quicker, and use rapid antigen testing to test as many people as possible really, really quickly. The key with Delta is getting as many people tested as quickly as possible, because unlike the old form of COVID, the wild strain of COVID, Delta spreads more quickly. So you've got to test as many people as you can as quickly as possible. And rapid antigen testing has a role there from a surveillance point of view, but it's banned in New Zealand. Get that. It's actually banned. It's just quite unbelievable. And so this is my point around the government not making use of some of the innovative tools and techniques that other countries are using that we could also use if we just, you know, turned our mind to it.
Well, if you were to look at the whole of this last 18 months and you could wave a magic wand and say, well, look, actually, this could be fixed and this would be the result of having done that, what would that be?
Well, I think saliva testing in our MIQ facilities is one that I think has been a real missed opportunity. So we have been testing people who work in MIQ and at the border on fortnightly or weekly testing cycles. Our view has been, alongside public health experts, that if you test people more regularly in a much more friendly and less invasive way, then you get better results. You pick up COVID cases more quickly, and then, of course, you can take the necessary action. So saliva testing is a real missed opportunity. I think not using rapid antigen testing has been a missed opportunity. For example, I mean, obviously the most current outbreak is an example where you could use rapid antigen testing. But back in February, when we had the what's regarded now as the Auckland February cluster, when we had to test a large number of people very quickly, I think that could have been shortened by the use of rapid antigen testing. So that's an example where we could really have used that. And we suggested that at the time. The government said no. Just hints in the last couple of weeks from the Prime Minister around the role of rapid testing. So like a lot of things the National Party suggested, Gerry, in the last year or so, government poo-poos it, a bit like pre-departure testing. Government poo-poos it, and then, you know, sure enough, it ends up being a government policy. And, you know, well, that's the role of opposition.
Yeah, we can't look back and dwell on that too much, but there'd be a long list of things that we suggested they should do. That they initially said, no, no, don't need it, and then have come screaming back into place.
A classic is purpose-built MIQ, purpose-built.
Well, that's the most recent one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the government now saying, oh, yeah, maybe we should have a look at this. I mean, if they'd got into it, 7, 8 months ago when we first suggested it, we could have a facility up and running and operating by now.
Well, that raises the question about the two things, really. The security of the MIQ system. We know that Delta entered New Zealand by virtue of an MIQ breach. And then the long-term need for MIQ facilities in the country.
Yeah, so look, I get asked a lot around what's going to happen with people who are doubly vaccinated who want to come back from overseas. And, you know, where we want to get to is a situation where if you've been doubly vaccinated, you know, with Pfizer, for example, and you want to come back to New Zealand, you're able to do so in a reasonably free manner. And we're working up our policy on that, but I just want people to realise that that is, of course, absolutely critical, because people who are doubly vaccinated have done the right thing. They've gone out and protected themselves and protected their community. And particularly if you're a Kiwi who wants to come home, you know, we want to make it much more easier for you to do so. And it may be that there's a period of isolation when you arrive, and maybe you've got to get a test when you before you leave, wherever you're coming from, but also when you arrive, and it may be a rapid antigen test, for example. But there's got to be an easier pathway than what it is at the moment, because it's not long-term sustainable to have 4,000 rooms, hotel rooms, largely in the centre of Auckland, by the way, which operate as an MIQ facility. That's not sustainable in the long term, and we've got to move away from that.
So yesterday you made a pretty significant announcement. Tell us about that, Primo.
Yeah, so what we've said is that we need to change up the allocation system for MIQ. So obviously in the long term, where we want to get to is moving away from hotels generally and towards purpose built, but also moving towards a system where people who are doubly vaccinated find it easier to come to New Zealand, particularly if they're from a low-risk country. But for the moment, we've got an MIQ system, and that's going to be with us for some time. So what we want to do is make some changes to the way the system works at the moment. So, for example, you know, the way it works at the moment is it's just a first-in, first-served basis, and people offshore are sitting on their computers, you know, for 24 hours a day, you know, 3-4 days in a row, just trying to get an MIQ spot. And that's just frankly unacceptable. And they're being beaten out by bots and being beaten out by people using third-party servers, paying people thousands of dollars to secure them a spot. So we need to ban all that, ban the bots, ban the third-party systems to try and secure the spots. And then what we want to do is move to a system that prioritises people based on why they want to come to New Zealand. So, you know, our view, quite frankly, is if you're coming home for a holiday, you're of less need to come back than someone visiting a sick or dying relative or someone who needs urgent medical treatment. It sounds a bit harsh to say it, but the reality is demand outstrips supply, and we have to be a bit fairer about the way in which we allocate these spaces. And that's our policy. Also, we want to introduce a waiting list, which is something that the people who are offshore trying to come home have long been asking for, and a bit more transparency over room dates as well.
You must have found it interesting to learn yesterday that New Zealand Trade and Enterprise were paying students to sit on the computers, gain MIQ spaces for some of their staff who are entitled to come back into New Zealand, I think, every 2 years for a break back here. A government agency doing that, I think, was really quite a revelation and quite an indictment on just how poorly that system's working at the moment.
Well, it's quite bizarre, isn't it? You've got one arm of government creating this unfair and opaque MIQ system, and you've got another branch of government doing its best to game the system. I mean, there's some strange irony there, quite a bizarre situation, and, you know, NZTE should really stop that, and we've said that they should.
Yeah, I'm sure they will, but it does highlight the problem that your policy announcement yesterday is trying to sort out. All right, so let's get ourselves 18 months ahead. Delta is largely under control in New Zealand. We hope the population is vaccinated above the 80% mark, ideally. We've got a different approach to the managed isolation, so people coming in that are double vaccinated might not have to go into the same arrangement. At what point do you see the country-to-country arrangements being much more pernicious than they are at the moment? So we tried the bubble with Australia. Bubble with Australia probably brought the Delta in. But the reality is that we couldn't stay isolated forever. And a lot of people were able to take advantage of that period where the bubble was open. Certainly was valuable to the business community, which, you know, we desperately need. I'm sorry to say it. It's important for New Zealand to be a trading nation. And that means we do have to travel at times.
Yeah, well, you've got to remember that the person who came in from Australia, the Sydney returnee, came on a managed isolation red flight. So we shouldn't say that the bubble caused the outbreak. He came in on a red flight. The problem there was something that happened in the MIQ at the Crown Plaza, and we need to get to the bottom of exactly what happened there. But if you throw forward...
Just to explain, Chris, what a red flight is. A lot of people listening to this won't understand what that term means and how it works.
Oh, sure. So what happened was in late July, after the government closed the bubble with Australia, there were obviously quite a few Kiwis still in New South Wales, in Sydney and the rest of the state who had to come back. And so the government alongside Air New Zealand arranged for flights for people who were still in New South Wales after the closure of the bubble. And they basically said, you have to go into MIQ once you come home. Because obviously by that point, COVID was spreading throughout New South Wales. So anyone who came in on those flights, the so-called red flights, those people went into MIQ and this returnee went into the Crown Plaza. Green flights are when that was when the bubble was open and you're able to just go back into the community. So this guy came in on a red flight. So we should separate it out from the bubble. If you go forward 18 months, look, it's only been 18 months since Delta turned up, since COVID turned up. So we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But look, I'd love to see us in 18 months. If you look at the vaccination coverage, I'd love us to get to 90%. I think that'd be absolutely fantastic. And I'd love us to get to a point where probably within 18 months, you'll have children under 12 being vaccinated as well, which of course increases our population coverage. 12 to 16 year olds have just been approved medically and by the government. Pfizer is in third stage trials for kids under 12. That would be good because of course it boosts the immunity of the whole country once you get those age groups into the system. I'd like to see us having the booster shots. So other countries are rolling out the boosters already because some of the emerging evidence is that Pfizer immunity wanes after 5 to 6 months. So where we'll get to, I think, eventually is people just having a COVID booster probably every year, a bit like the flu jab. And where I'd like to see us is Kiwis who are in Australia and other low-risk countries like Singapore, Taiwan, other countries that have done a good job tackling COVID. They are able to come into New Zealand with a pre-departure test, potentially a test on arrival, and make their way freely into the community. People coming from higher risk destinations, I suspect in 18 months we will still need a form of isolation and quarantine for them. But it may be a shorter period depending on vaccination status. And people who have been doubly vaccinated from higher risk countries may be able to come in for a shorter period of quarantine. We'll be guided by the science on that. This is an emerging field, and we've just got to stay nimble and stay on our toes.
You're observing other countries that we have a lot of similarities with, so all the countries we like to consider ourselves to be on a parallel with in many ways, the United States, Britain, other parts of Europe, and some parts of Southeast Asia. Where do you think we sit against them? I mean, at one point, Singapore was standout for success. Israel was an amazing sort of success that everyone was pointing to. You know, there was a high degree of sort of skepticism about what Britain were doing. Britain is now much more open. Israel is going into their third shot, plus boosters, but still have COVID-19 active in their community. Where do you think we sit as being slightly different from those countries? Is it just a function of our smaller population, our better educated population, or more to it than that?
Well, look, I mean, we start from the starting point where we don't have any, you know, with the exception of the Delta outbreak in the last couple of weeks, we don't have COVID in the community. So obviously Britain and other countries took a slightly different approach from the start compared to us. So that is the major difference. But interestingly, for a long time, we were number one or two on the Bloomberg resilience ranking. So people every now and then point to that and say, well, look at New Zealand, we're number one. We've done so amazingly. Look at the Bloomberg rankings. Well, now we're number 29. And the reason for that is that Delta is back, or Delta is here, I should say. And of course, we weren't really prepared for it. And so we're now ranked number 29. So what we've got to try and do is stamp it out and put in place the tools and techniques to make sure it doesn't come back if we possibly can. And gear up the vaccination drive as quickly as we can. You know, there'll be people overseas and you know, there'll be Kiwis in London and Kiwis offshore who are living in the United States and living in the UK and looking around and looking back at New Zealand saying, well, I want to come home, and we've got to try and create a pathway for them to be able to do that into the future.
And your own experience with the vaccine, quite a pleasant one, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've been doubly vaccinated. Look, I found my arm was a bit sore for a day or two. I don't know about you, but, you know, completely fine. And, I mean, the technology is incredible, eh? I mean, developed so quickly, but, you know, rigorously tested and, you know, hundreds of millions of doses being given out around the world. And, of course, you just have to look at the results of places that are vaccinated to see the results.
Yeah, I didn't have any discomfort in the arm at all, but then I've got an awful lot of cushion for it to absorb. The RNA technology is quite amazing, isn't it? I mean, would you, having spent so much time, as I know you have, looking into the efficacy of that, care to predict what you think that whole technology might achieve in other medical fields in the years ahead?
Well, look, don't ask me to explain the science behind it, because I'm not a scientist, but I've done my reading about it. And the interesting thing is it was this sort of forgotten branch of science for quite a while. And but basically, people sort of forgotten about it. No one really spent a lot of time researching it. Didn't get many grants and that sort of funding. And then all of a sudden, COVID turns up. And it's one of these classic science stories. COVID turns up and someone says, rightio, actually, what about the old mRNA technology? Let's try that out. And it fits perfectly. And now we've created these vaccines, which are highly, high spec, well-researched, but based on something that had been kind of quietly been developing for a while, but without any particular use for straight away. The potential, I'm told by people who know about this, the potential for mRNA vaccinations of science to be used with other illnesses is quite immense. And I'm sure that what you'll now see, of course, is the funding and the research expertise flow into that field. It'll be fascinating to see where it goes in 2 to 3 years. But it's one of these things, people often forget about science. But science is in many ways the foundation of, modern prosperity. And it's just something we've just got to keep investing in.
Yeah, I think that those discoveries around the RMA, so transmitted gas capabilities, etc., 2006 was, a Nobel Prize awarded for that. And so it's amazing that it did just sit there undeveloped, I suppose you'd say, for quite a long time. So I guess there is a silver lining to come out of these things, this sort of thing will be it. But I think you're absolutely right, be guided by the science. And then, of course, the practical applications of things you need to do to make sure that the science is not unduly disrupted. So, Chris Bishop, can I thank you very much for joining us here today in the Backroom of Politics. Look forward to hearing from you soon.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.